down in Egypt. There was a group of folks, sort of like Jehovah's Witnesses. I've got the Jehovah's Witness Bible here. They were a cult. They came to be known as the Alexandrians. The Alexandrians did not believe in the deity of Christ. They didn't believe in the bodily resurrection. They didn't believe in a lot of Christian things, kind of like Jehovah's Witnesses today. So they made their own copy of the Bible, changing things they didn't like. They made about 6,000 changes. The primary guy in this cult was a guy named Origen. He was the leader of this cult in late 2nd century, 3rd century. The only mention of Alexandria in the Bible is when they were disputing with Stephen, arguing with the real Christians. And if you trust the principle of first mention, which I think is very important, then that'll be important to you. They say, wow, the only mention of these folks is bad. And so anything out of Alexandria, anything out of Egypt, period, in the Bible, that seems to be bad, you know. But Origen started this, or was the primary guy in this cult. They made copies of their Bible also, with their changes in it. And some of them survived. In 350 A.D., several copies were made, and three of those still survive today. One was found in the Vatican Library, and it's called Vaticanus. One was found in Alexandria, Egypt, and it's called Alexandris in the Latin. And one was found in Sinai Peninsula in a monastery. There's this old monastery at the foot of this mountain that some pharaohs or some princess said, that's Mount Sinai, and it's not Mount Sinai, by the way. But she said, oh, that's Mount Sinai. Okay, yes, ma'am. And so they call it Mount. They still call it Mount Sinai. There's still a monastery there. It's not in Sinai Peninsula. It's in Arabia. Read Galatians 4. But they're in this trash can in this old monastery, this guy was visiting. He said, what's this old scroll? He said, oh, we don't know. It's been in there for years, you know. He pulled it out. It was a copy of the Bible, if you can call it that, from 350 A.D. And so that one's called Sinaiticus. Well, these three scrolls do not agree with each other on anything, nor do they agree with the real Bible. Okay, they're all different. The Catholics, or the monks, translated these three ancient scrolls into Latin centuries ago, and it became known as the Latin Vulgate. Vulgate for vulgar means the common language, okay? Then the Catholic, by the way, the Latin Vulgate was a really good translation of a bad book. Then the Catholics came along in 1582 and translated the Latin Vulgate into English with the Douay Confraternity or the Douay Rheims version of the Bible. And that was a really good translation of a bad book. Then two guys named Westcott and Hort came along. I've got their book here someplace on the table. Westcott and Hort came along, and they were going to make a new... Yeah, here we go. The Westcott-Hort-only controversy. A little bitty booklet about... If you want to study this, just $2 from our ministry. Westcott and Hort were two Greek scholars. I don't know if they were even Christian or not. They probably claimed that they were, like a lot of people do. Okay, but they took these three old ancient manuscripts. They didn't agree with each other, but their thinking was, these are older, therefore they are better. Well, I'll go along with the older part. I'll agree with there, but that doesn't mean they're better. But they synthesized them into one new Greek manuscript and sold it to the world in 1875 and said, we have the oldest and best manuscripts available now for you to translate. And they got the oldest ones all right. The oldest ones that survived is all. Doesn't mean better. Then people started taking their Westcott and Hort version and translating it into English. First one done 1881 as the Revised Standard, then the American Standard, the Revised Standard, the Revised Version first, then the Jehovah's Witness Bible, the New World Translation done in 1950. This was a good translation, fairly good translation of a bad book. Then the New American Standard, the NIV, the Good News, the Amplified, the Living Bible, all of those, and I have a lot of them. Here's the New American Standard. I think the guys who are doing this are sincere, dedicated, highly intelligent, godly Christians who are translating the wrong book and don't even know it. There are basically only two Bibles in the world, in the English. The ones translated from what's called the majority text, the King James, of which there are now 64,000 manuscripts. At the time King James guys did it, they only had 5,000. And then there's the whole other family of Bibles, all translated from the Westcott and Hort. So you have two choices. The question is not, is it a good translation? The question is, what are they translating? Okay? The excellent book by Westcott and Hort, if you want to read about that. Here's, for instance, NIV, Acts chapter 8. Let's see, Adam, read verse 37 to me. Acts 8:37.
I can't do it.
You can't do it. It's not there. There is no Acts 8:37. They removed it, and they removed the number, okay? Now, in the New American Standard, they at least put a footnote. In Acts 8:37, it says, see footnote. But the verse is gone. Down at the bottom it says, late manuscripts insert verse 37. No, 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 no. Guys, you got it all wrong. Those supposed early manuscripts you're going on are the ones that took it out. It wasn't that the later guys inserted it, it's that the earlier guys took one out, that's all. There are over 200 verses totally missing from the NIV. There's a good book, Understandable History of the Bible, Sam Gipp. Great big book, excellent book, really good on understanding the history of how we got our Bible. Or Gail Ripplinger's book, In Awe of Thy Word. It's like 1,200 pages, and it's only like $15 or $18 or something. Really, really a good one. There are many, many books that we offer on the King James controversy. If you want one that's toned down and kind of, you know, sweet, gentle, and mild, this would be it by Sam Gipp. The Answer Book, excellent book on why King James. The language of the King James, why do they use these old words, thee and thou and stuff like that? Oh, there's a good reason for that. But the whole thinking that older is better is simply wrong. And how is Satan going to use these new versions toward bringing in his new world order? Well, this one, the New Age Bible Versions, is excellent by Gail Ripplinger, PhD in English. So older does not mean better. I have worn out many Bibles over my 37 years of being a Christian. Older doesn't mean better. So there are more manuscripts of the Bible than any other old book. Homer's Iliad, for instance, only has about 650 manuscripts. In 1946, they found 24,000 more manuscripts. Then the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, and now they have 64,000 manuscripts that support the King James, and 3 complete manuscripts and 46 fragments that support the Alexandrian. Then the Isaiah scroll found in the Dead Sea Scrolls was actually 1,000 years older than the other manuscripts. So there's plenty of good books available on that. There are all kinds of things we could talk about on the problems with the King James, or problems with the other versions, like 2 Samuel 21. Who killed Goliath? Who killed Goliath? David killed Goliath. 2 Samuel 21 says, Elhanan, the son of his dad, slew the brother of Goliath. NIV says, Elhanan, the son of the same guy, killed Goliath. This is an error. Okay? It's wrong. They blew it, all right? They left out verses, and we could scan through some of these. All these verses are left out. There's a list on their website, avpublications.com, of verses that are left out. 200 verses are simply gone. And those that are still in there, many times are changed to something meaning totally different. For instance, Hosea chapter 11, Judah yet ruleth with God, NIV. Judah is unruly against God. Would you say that is saying the same thing? Judah is also unruly against God? It's not saying the same thing. Thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth, Genesis 27. That's one of the blessings. Your dwelling shall be away from earth's richness. Away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling. They're saying the opposite, folks. It's not the same. Proverbs 18. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. What's that mean? If you want to have a lot of friends, then be friendly. NIV. A man of many companions may come to ruin. Are these saying the same thing? Am I missing something here? If you got a lot of friends, you'll be ruined? That's what it says. That's not at all correct. The Bible says in Matthew 7 that narrow is the way. Straight is the gate and narrow the way that leadeth to life. And few there be that find it. Revised Standard says the gate is narrow and the way is hard. Wait, is it hard to go to heaven or just not many do it? Now they use the these and the thous, and there's a reason for that. And then we'll go on to another subject here. If a word starts with Y, it is plural. Ye, your, etc. Okay? If it starts with T, it is singular, and there's an important reason. Nobody in 1611 was walking down the street saying, how art thou today? They weren't using that. But the King James translators wisely chose to use the these and the thous because of the distinction. If I walk into a room and say, you come with me, does that mean one of you or all of you? You can't tell. But if you use thee and thou, you can tell. You can see in John chapter 3 very clearly. Jesus said to Nicodemus, marvel not that I said unto thee, singular, ye must be born again. He changed it to plural. I'm telling you that everybody must be born again. That's a really important distinction. Otherwise, he'd be saying, Nicodemus, I'm telling you that you got to be born again. Well, how does that apply to Kent Hovind? It wouldn't apply. The fact is, it's very precise in the King James. So we can talk all day about that. We'll cover more in our college class. I think the whole concept you need to get in your head is God promised he would preserve his word, so where is it? I would like to hold a copy of it. And after 30-some years, I was slowly dragged, kicking and screaming, into the King James camp. God preserved his word for in English, and we've got it. A couple of verses really attract my attention because of my speaking on creation all the time. Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 9. King James says, "To make all men see what is the mystery, the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the world hath been hid in God, who created all things by Jesus Christ." There are two important phrases here. It says, "from the beginning of the world." That's a definite time. He created things by Jesus Christ. Colossians 1 says the same thing. Jesus created all things. Jesus is God in the flesh. Well, a lot of these new Bible versions come from the Alexandrian, and they did not believe Jesus was God in the flesh. And bookstores, of course, want to sell lots of Bibles, love of money, root of all evil, and they don't want to offend anybody. So, hey, let's sell a Bible version that doesn't offend people. So look what they did with Ephesians 3:9, "which for ages past was kept hidden in God who created all things." Well, they left off Jesus. You don't want to offend people, you know. And they made it ages past instead of from the beginning. Nearly all the new Bible versions have changed it to say ages, ages, ages. And they leave off Jesus in every case, except for the New King James. They left Jesus in there, but they still call it ages past. That's the only one I could find that left Jesus in there, but they all changed it to ages. They don't want to get this definite six-day, you know, young earth creationist, because they might offend people and, again, lose money. Now, we could spend hours on the different problems with these verses. The last one that bothers me is it the first day in Genesis 1:5, or is it one day? Every version that I found says one day. King James says the first day. Why would they change it to one day? Well, again, they're trying to allow for the long periods of time. And I don't understand how somebody can read Genesis 1:5 and still believe there's a gap between verse 1 and 2 of any amount of time, more than an hour. The first day. It couldn't be more clear in my mind.